listening to Sherpa Legends, a presentation of the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 2 of our new show, Sherpa Legends.
These are conversations with youth ministry men and women who have achieved legendary status. So, man, I'm really excited about today's conversation with a guy that I've known for a long time, somebody that you're not familiar with.
No, his name is Greg Speck. I've heard lots of amazing things about him.
Greg is a youth speaker. He also speaks for Family Life. He does marriage conferences. The amazing thing is that Greg has been speaking around the world for over 30 years.
That's absolutely amazing.
Almost exclusively to teenagers. And I saw him last winter. We do a winter camp at this place in Pennsylvania called Camp Orchard Hill. And Greg was there speaking to our middle school camp. And it was amazing. And I thought, as I watched him speak, having this long history with him, which we talk a little bit about in the interview, he's on my Mount Rushmore of youth ministry.
Really? That's awesome.
Yes, because he's so faithful. He's been in it for so long. He's literally touched thousands and thousands of lives around the world. And he's not necessarily a name that, you know, current youth workers might know. He's not in the you know, national conference circuit. He's not writing a ton of books, although he does have a book, which we will talk about at the end. But he's just a faithful, incredible speaker, dynamic speaker who loves teenagers and has done this for so long that he has definitely achieved this legendary status.
So he's a real treat for you all with this interview that's coming up. Unfortunately, I, due to some scheduling problems, wasn't able to be present, but Steve carried the Sherpa torch and conducted this interview, and there's just some great stuff ahead for you listeners.
Yeah, this is a very faithful, wise, long-standing youth minister. His name's Greg Speck. I hope you love this interview.
So without any further ado, Steve Anderson's interview with Greg Speck.
Well, I'd like to welcome the amazing Greg Speck to Sherpa Legends today. Greg, thanks for being on the show.
It is great to join you. Thanks for having me. I've been called a lot of things, but never a legend. So
is that right?
Yeah.
Well, I have to tell you a little bit about my history with you, which you're completely unaware of. But I've actually heard you speak and known of you and met you many times over the past almost 30 years.
Wow.
It started back in probably 1991 or so when I was working as a volunteer, as a youth worker at Hershey Free Church.
Oh, sure. Yes.
And we brought you in to speak for a couple of weekends over those years. Do you remember that at all?
Oh, I absolutely remember Hershey Free and spoke there for several different youth pastors. Who was the youth pastor when you were there?
It was Mike Wagner.
Yeah, well, Mike and I still stay in touch, and he's just a great guy, good friend.
Yeah. What I remember is I was the communications director of the church, so part of my responsibility was to promote you coming to the church to speak for the weekend. And we built it as comedian Greg Speck.
That's kind of the kiss of death. Right there. Yeah, so, he's so funny. He's going to be so funny. Yeah, that's pretty much means I'm dead man walking.
Yeah, we set you up as a stand-up comic. But I was just, you know, I was so blessed by those messages back then and so impressed. And then a few years later, at the Free Church has a conference called Challenge.
Sure.
And I think it was in Cincinnati, perhaps. Maybe 1992 or 94, and you were one of the keynote speakers at that conference as well.
Yes, I did several of those challenge conferences, and I can't remember exactly all the places I was. But yeah, I remember Challenge.
And so to hear you speak just last winter at Camp Orchard Hill to our middle school kids now just brought me full circle. And I've heard you in the interim a few times as well.
Okay.
Just brought me full circle back to my roots in youth ministry and what a tremendous influence you've been on me and on so many people through the years. I tweeted out when we were at Camp Orchard Hill last winter that you're on my Mount Rushmore of youth ministry.
That is so nice. Thanks. Aren't you glad to realize the years have not matured me at all?
You look exactly the same.
Wow. This is why you're my best friend.
So yeah, you just have such a long-standing authority and voice in youth ministry, and I'm so blessed to have you on the show today.
Thanks. Well, I'm glad to be with you.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, what you do and your family and all that kind of stuff.
Sure. Well, I started in youth ministry in 1973 as a caseworker with delinquent, emotionally disturbed teenagers. And that's really what gave me a love for teenagers, because I felt if I can work with emotionally disturbed teenagers, I can work with any kind of teenager. I went from there to be a youth pastor, and from a youth pastor into full-time speaking, and really have been doing that ever since. So my full-time job is just to travel and speak to high school, middle school. I do marriage conferences, parenting conferences, and I love the ministry that God's called me to. I have a beautiful wife, Bonnie, and we've been married for over 40 years, and wow. Four children, Justin, Julia, Kelly, and Garrett, all married. One living in Pasadena, California, one in Rockford, Illinois, one in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and one in Boston, Massachusetts. So wow. We are scattered, five grandchildren and two on the way. So life is very, very good right now. Very sweet time.
That is amazing. So when you were starting out in youth ministry, you first got called into it. How did you sense that this was what God had made you to do?
Yeah, it's crazy how God did that. I was at Bethel University and majored in sociology and decided that I was going to be an elementary school teacher. And so I applied to San Jose State to go one more year to get my teaching credential. I'm born and raised in California, San Francisco area. And right before I'm ready to graduate and go to San Jose State, I get a phone call. And a guy says, Greg, you've been recommended to us for a job. We'd like to fly you in for an interview. And I said, wow. I said, well, thank you. Who are you? Where are you? He said, well, we are Sunny Ridge Home in Wheaton, Illinois. And you've been recommended to us as the men's caseworker to work with delinquent, emotionally disturbed teenagers. And my initial thought was, man, do I look like I have a death wish? Emotionally disturbed, delinquent teenagers, that's the last group I want to work with. I'm going to be an elementary school teacher. So I'm embarrassed to say it, but I thought to myself, hey, they're going to fly me in. Hey, how many people are being flown in for interviews? So right. I'm like, yeah, sure, you can fly me in. Yeah, I'll come in thinking I'll spend one day on site and I'll say, oh, thank you, no, thank you, and I'll move on. And they flew me in and they drove me to the site and I got out and I just sensed God saying, this is where I want you.
Wow.
And I was just like, Lord, you've got to be kidding me. God, this is really not what I want. This is not my dream. This is not my direction. And at this point, I had been a Christian for about probably 4.5 years at this point. So I'm still pretty new in my walk with the Lord, but I really had a heart for him and I really wanted to do what he wanted me to do. So I said, okay, I said yes to the job, and man, in hindsight, I see that's exactly what God wanted for me. That's exactly where my sweet spot was going to be.
Did you ever figure out how they found you?
Yes, they called my professor at Bethel and said, give us a name of somebody, and he gave them my name.
You had no idea where that was going to lead at the time.
No, I didn't. If you would have told me back then that I would be doing what I'm doing now, I would have said to you, you're crazy. You're crazy. I would never do that. But God just slowly brought me along.
So what was the next step then from there?
Well, then I'd been at Sunny Ridge, and I got a phone call. And a guy said, hi, you've been recommended to us as a pastor, and we're wondering if we could bring you in for an interview. And I said, man, thank you. I'm honored.
But you're not flying me in, so I'm not coming.
Yeah, that's exactly it. But I said, you know, I really feel like God has me here at this time, and I appreciate that. I have no training in being a youth pastor. I didn't become a Christian until I was a senior in high school, and I don't have any experience in the youth group. So I don't really know how a youth group runs, what happens, what goes on. So I said, I'm totally unqualified. Thank you, but no thank you. 6 months go by. The same guy calls me on the phone again. He says, Greg, everything seems to just be pointing back to you. Would you be willing to come in and interview? And I just said, man, I'm honored. Thank you so much. But no, I just don't feel like the timing's right. I don't think I could do this now. Another 6 months goes by, and he calls me a third time.
How old were you at this time?
About 24 years old.
Okay.
24, 25.
Okay.
So he calls me the third time, and I'm like, wow. I said, okay, all right, I'll come in and I will interview. And I honestly, I just lowballed myself. I just was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't have any experience in this area. Yes, I love teenagers, and yes, I love speaking, and I have very few administrative skills, and I'm not going to be good at that. And I went through the whole thing, and they voted to call me to be the youth pastor. And so I said yes, and I went there, and that was the next step. And it was there that God really started to develop my speaking skills. Because I had a youth group that I had to speak to at least two times a week, and I had to come up with different material. And so God really used that to hone my speaking.
When you were growing up, did you have any sense that public speaking was going to be a gift that you were going to share with the world?
Absolutely not. I grew up in a cult.
Really?
So, yeah. So we grew up in the Christian Science Church.
Wow.
So, Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. Usually I say that and people go, oh, Tom Cruise? I'm like, that's Scientology. No, this is Christian Science. So no, high school, middle school, I had a terrible self-image. I was totally introverted, had little or no self-confidence. My only sense of worth came from sports. I played football, and I was good at football. And so that was really my vehicle to gain some acceptance. But to think I would stand before a crowd and speak to them on anything, no. I did not see that at all.
That's amazing. How long were you the youth pastor at that church?
Well, altogether, I was youth pastor for 10 years. Between two churches in Rockford, Temple Baptist Church and First Evangelical Free Church. Temple Baptist, I was a youth pastor, and then there was a 10-year gap, and then I came back to First Free Church as their director of student ministries, overseeing the whole youth ministry department.
Okay. And how did you get into the itinerant speaking world?
Well, I worked with a guy at Temple Baptist Church. His name was Lowell Bakke. And Lowell Bakke walks into my office one day and he says, Greg, I'm scheduled to speak for a retreat for teenagers. He goes, something's come up and I can't do it. Can you take it for me? So I'm like, well, sure, I'll do it for you. And so I don't really know anything about it, but I accept this and I get there and it's a leadership retreat for teenagers from like, 25, 30 different. And so I stand up in front of them and speak for a weekend and God just gave me favor. And I just started to get calls about coming and speaking for a retreat or, you know, back then banquets were big deals. And so okay. Come speak for a banquet or something like that. And so it got to the point where I said to Bonnie, either I have to say no to all these requests or maybe I step into this full time. What do you think? And Bonnie, in her wisdom, said to me, you can always be a youth pastor, but if you don't try this for the rest of your life, you're going to wonder, could I have done this? Mm-hmm. I think you should step out and give it a try.
Wow.
And so Bonnie was totally right, and I did that. And this is really what God has gifted me to do. And mm-hmm. I am not the nitty gritty of the youth ministry. Mm-hmm. I tell youth pastors, look, you're the nitty gritty. Thank God for you. You're in the trenches. You're on the front line. I mean, I can play a part. I can come in and I can encourage and motivate and stimulate and try to train and develop a little bit. But look, if every youth speaker in the world dropped dead tomorrow, youth ministry would go on because of the youth pastors, because of the youth workers that are involved intimately in the lives of those students.
Yeah.
So even though I understand I'm not the nitty-gritty of the youth ministry, I think I still play a part in ministering to them.
Absolutely. You have any idea how many kids you've spoken to?
Wow. Man, no idea. Hundreds of thousands, you know, all over, you know, the United States. And I've spoken quite a bit internationally as well. So a lot of students.
It would be fascinating to know that number, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It would. Somebody asked me the other day, how many countries have you spoken in? And I'm like, wow, I should sit down and figure that out. Yeah. So yeah, it would be interesting to know that. But no, I didn't keep track of any of that.
You've been doing this now for over 30 years.
Yeah, since 1973.
Wow.
Working with teenagers.
That's amazing. So most of the teenagers that you've spoken to are now older than the people listening to this podcast.
Yeah, well, let me tell you what I usually hear when I do youth retreats. A kid comes up to me and says, hi, you don't know me, but when my mother was in middle school, she heard you speak.
Right.
When my dad was in high school, he heard you speak. So yeah, I feel totally blessed and honored that I can still minister to another generation of teenagers. And there are not many guys my age that are still out there speaking. And that's just God's favor. That's just his blessing. And I take no credit for that at all.
Has your calling changed over the years, Greg?
Well, my calling has expanded. So it was exclusively teenagers for a while. High school, middle school, that was it. And now as the years go by, it's expanded. So now I'm on the speaker team with Family Life. Dan Robinson is our president. He used to be Dennis and Barbara Rainey. And so I speak for the weekend to remember marriage conferences. And so because of that, more churches invite me to come in and speak for adult things like men's retreat or parenting conferences or marriage conferences or things like that. So yes, my speaking has expanded and it's changed some. But I have not lost my passion for speaking to teenagers.
Which is amazing. Tell us a little bit about your speaking style.
I'm a storyteller. People say, be funny, tell me a joke. No, I'm not a joke teller. That's not That's not where my humor comes from. My humor develops from my stories. I'm very, very biblically based. So I feel like I can encourage students. I can challenge them. Maybe I can even inspire them, but only God can change them. So my speaking is grounded in the Word of God. And I'm not going to mention any names, but I spoke for a large youth conference, and they brought in four different speakers, Friday night, Saturday morning, Saturday night, Sunday morning. I'm the Sunday morning speaker. So that's such a great time because everybody's in a coma and ready to go home, and I'm the last speaker. But I get up there Sunday morning and I speak and I challenge them. And then I say, hey, I'm going to step off the platform. I know you're leaving to get on your buses to go, but just want to be available. If you want to say hi, would love to meet you, whatever. So I'm just down there shaking hands and people are leaving. And I had three different youth guys come up to me and say, hey, thanks. You're the only speaker that used the Bible. And I thought to myself, man, that's crazy.
That is crazy.
That's so sad. I mean, what are we thinking? Are we, as speakers, thinking that somehow we have the ability to change these teenagers? No. No, that's ridiculous. Only God can do that. So I'm very biblically based. I'm a storyteller. And I want to make the Word of God practical for teenagers. I want to really apply it to their lives so that they can begin to live it out in real life.
Has your style changed at all over the years?
Sure. I started out and it was primarily all drama. Like when I would speak to the teenagers, I would act out the story of the paralytic. And I would be the four people carrying him. I would be the Pharisees. I'd be the people. I'd be Jesus. I would just act this whole thing out. I would act out Jonah and the whale and everything he went through. So everything I did was all kind of drama. That's kind of how it started. So it was very biblically based. However, I was not bringing really much depth to the messages. They were very entertaining, fun, funny. A lot of groups asked me to come in and perform and do this for them. So, yeah, I don't do that anymore. First of all, I don't have the energy or stamina to act out all that stuff. But yeah. I just feel like messages today to students need to have more depth. We need to be speaking to their needs, not merely entertaining them, although I think humor and entertainment can be part of that for sure.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit because humor is definitely a big part of what you do as a speaker.
Yeah.
How do you see that impact your speaking?
I used to do a lot of public school assemblies, and so I realized when they said, let's welcome Greg Speck, and I walked onto that stage, I realized that I had 3 minutes to capture them. And if I didn't capture them in 3 minutes, I could kiss that assembly goodbye. Mm. Because these students don't know me at all. And they're sitting there.
Did they come to hear Greg Speck, the comedian?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Yeah. So they want to know, why am I here? Who is this guy? Why should I even listen to him? So I found that I could grab them in one of two ways. Either number one, I could go up there and say something that made them think, ooh, he really understands me. Or I could go up there and get them to laugh. Hmm. And if I could get them to laugh, then they would begin to say to themselves, hey, maybe this won't be so bad. Hmm. Hey, maybe this will be okay. And I've just found it easier initially to get them to laugh. And I believe that humor lowers walls and breaks down defenses and opens students' hearts and minds more to the truth. And I personally find it easier for me to listen and learn if I can laugh a little bit.
Did you work hard at developing the sense of humor and weaving it into the stories?
Yeah. Yeah, I think through that a lot. When I walk up to speak, sometimes people ask me, is this just all spontaneous? Is this all just coming off your top of your head? And I'm like, no, typically not at all. Unless something happens in the crowd or something right. goes on and I react to that or something humorously. But most of this is no, this is all thought out. This is all planned. And I'm trying new things and some things are working and some things aren't. And so I'm like, oh, okay, I can use that again. And then, oh, okay, never use that again.
Yeah.
So that I think through the humor a lot, that's part of it. Kind of when I put together a message, I want to have an intro, I want to do some humor. I want to have a conclusion. What's the one thing I really want to leave them with? What's the one thing I really want to hold on to? And then each point I make, I want to make sure it is biblically based. I want to illustrate it, and I want to make it practical. Mm-hmm. That's just kind of my format in my message preparation and working things through. And much of my illustrations are humorous, just because I like humor and I do humor. And so it's just kind of more natural for me to do that.
It's such a simple format. I think that's why it connects so well with teenagers. It's really yeah. easy to follow.
Yeah. And that's what I want. That's yeah. what I want is simple. I think sometimes in communicating, we want to back up the truck and we want to unload everything. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of, we get out of balance, too much information, we lose the students. And so when I follow those three steps, biblically based, illustrate, make it practical, I think it keeps my message more balanced as well.
Yeah. So as you think back to each decade that you've been doing this, we did an episode not too long ago about the lessons we learned in each decade of youth ministry. What would you say are some things that you learned along the way, kind of decade by decade, about being a youth worker?
Well, the 70s was all about just a huge learning curve. And I knew nothing about youth ministry. So I was just a sponge sucking up as much as I could. A big name back then was a guy by the name of Ray Steadman. And Ray Steadman was all about body life, and he was all about small group and all about interaction. And we were really getting away from large group meetings, and we were really looking at more intimacy. 1980s was my beginning to travel and speak full time. And when I first started out in the 1980s, nobody was interested in a full-time communicator. I mean, I contacted Young Life, I contacted Campus Crusade for Christ, I contacted Youth for Christ, I contacted all these organizations. Nobody was interested. As a matter of fact, they would say to me, we're moving away from the big group meetings, we're moving away from those big rallies. So I just had to form my own ministry. So it was Youth Ministries International, and it was just me learning then how to develop messages that were going to connect with just a diverse group, different backgrounds, different parts of the country, and different parts of the country do resonate differently with humor, presentation, all of that stuff. So the 80s was all about me kind of getting established as a full-time speaker. The 90s was me stepping back into youth ministry and taking on the position of a director of student ministries for a youth ministry that was pretty dysfunctional and was having a lot of trouble and a lot of problems. And the church really wanted to get it turned around. So I did that, and it was great. Saw a lot of success, and 90s was me developing more administratively, because now I was becoming kind of the executive pastor for youth ministry.
Okay.
Full-time high school pastor, full-time middle school pastor, full-time women's coordinator, full-time administrative secretary. So it was a pretty large youth ministry. And so I was having to kind of run that and oversee that. And then the 2000s, well, that's been really about expansion. It's been about moving, continuing to work with teenagers, speak to teenagers out there full time, but it's now expanding, moving into adult, moving into more church-based type of speaking to varieties of groups and things like that.
How many speaking engagements do you take a year?
I'm on the road speaking 12 to 15 days a month.
Okay.
And then I don't accept more than that just because it really throws me out of balance with family.
Hmm.
So although that sounds like a lot, 12 to 15 days, that means every month I get 15 to 18 days off every month.
So, which sounds pretty good.
Yeah. So that works out very good.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that. You know, all the traveling you've done over the years, and yet you were staying grounded with your family and your kids. And, you know, how did you manage to keep connected at home while you were doing so much on the road?
Yeah, well, first of all, major props and credit to my wife, Bonnie. She is the rock that really holds our family together. Bonnie and I are very, very different, but she has been absolutely the perfect wife for me. Mm-hmm. God provided her, and she brings strengths to all my weaknesses. So where I am Mr. Lighthearted, she's a little more serious. I'm Mr. Spontaneous. She's more self-disciplined. So she's like, you keep our family fun. And I'm like, yeah, but you keep us on the straight and narrow. All the cylinders going, you're helping to make it happen.
Yeah.
So it was Bonnie's encouragement of the kids. Isn't this great what Dad is doing? And aren't we excited? And let's be praying for him and let's support him and all of that. That was a huge blessing and a huge help to me. And then being able to schedule around major events in my children's lives. So I book out far enough where I'm able to say yes or no to things depending on when they were occurring and what's going on and things like that. And then I write my children notes. So I mail them cards, Hallmark cards, things like that, because a tweet goes away and an email disappears and all of that. But a card they can keep for the rest of their lives.
Hmm.
And I write them and I say to them, I believe in you and I'm proud of you and I love you and you are a great man and you are an awesome woman and God has tremendous plans for your life and hang on to Jesus and da 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 and all of that. And so even when I'm dead, you know, God can continue to speak to them through me, through the letters and notes I've shared with them.
Hmm.
And then Bonnie was the one that taught me to date my kids.
Hmm.
So I would take my kids out on dates. I would try to take them out at least once every couple of weeks on a date. And we would go wherever they wanted to go to eat. And they would usually always say McDonald's. And then once they got older, I would no longer ask them, where would you like to go to eat? Because they would say Ruth Chris. And I would go to McDonald's. We'll go to McDonald's. And there we would just sit at the table and we just talk. And my whole goal in going out with my kids was not to talk about issues, but not to deal with the report card. It was just to have fun. Yeah. To speak life into them, to listen to them, to encourage them. Mm. And I've told parents that your kids may be different, but for mine, I could sit with my daughters around the dinner table for hours, and they would talk. But was that true of my sons? No. About 20 minutes after the food had arrived, it was consumed, and they were like, okay, what's going on now? And I discovered with my boys that significant conversation occurred in the midst of activity.
Sure.
So going out and shooting baskets, going bowling, going mini putting, doing whatever, that's when those conversations would occur. And then also I would put my kids to bed a lot. And that also gave me individual time with them. And I would take them up a little early and we pray together and I get into bed with them and they would always say to me, ask me questions. So I just lay in bed. And when they were little, I'd be like, if you could be any kind of an animal, what kind of animal would you like to be? If you could travel anywhere in the world and do anything, where would you go? What would you do? But I could also go ask them, hey, what scares you? And how do you feel about God? And what do you wish your daddy wouldn't do? And there were times laying there that God gave me pearls of wisdom and insight into the lives of my kids. So
that's awesome.
So those are some of the ways I would seek to stay connected with them.
Yeah. What I noticed recently or the last few times that I've heard you speak is you've become a father in your speaking to the kids.
Yeah.
Less of a speaker or authority figure from afar and more of a father figure. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, I'm as far away as you can get from hipster, man. I mean, you know, most teenagers think I look like a combination of Fred Flintstone, Droopy Dog, and the Cowardly Lion on The Wizard of Oz. So well, I know I'm not going to wow them visually, but I believe that I've gotten to the point now and years of life where I am able to speak to them as a father. I'm able to speak to them like I would speak to my own children. And to be able to love them, encourage them, speak life into them, but also challenge them. Challenge them to say yes to some things and say no to some other things. I give out a lot of dad hugs. You know, a lot of students come up to me, can I have a dad hug? And I'm like, yeah, I'd love to give you a dad hug. And I'll give them a dad hug. And for the women, I will say to them, you are a wonderful, beautiful, special, gifted, talented woman of God. And I believe in you. I'm proud of you. And I love you. Don't ever give up. And for the guys, I'll hug them and I'll say, you are a great man. You are a hero of the faith. I believe in you. I'm proud of you. I love you. Be strong and courageous. God has great plans for your life. And you know, most often these teenagers will just sob. They'll just sob when I hug them. Because I just think it's like giving cold water to a thirsty person. It's like something they so long to hear. They so want to experience. And too often we have homes where parents have walked out or they're absent emotionally or spiritually, or they've no longer connected, or they've given up, or they've gotten so much baggage that they just find it hard to give to their kids. And so, yeah, I just see this as a great role I can take on to just encourage them and love on them.
Isn't it wonderful to have such longevity in youth ministry to be able to grow into that role?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yes. And all the years and the heartache and the ups and the downs and the struggles and the tears and all of that are worth it.
Yeah.
They're worth it to have the longevity in youth ministry to continue to speak into students.
How many times did you want to quit?
Oh, man. My first year at Temple Baptist Church as their youth pastor, I went into my senior pastor, Gordon Hanstead, and I quit three times. Three times the first year. And all three times, he talked me out of it, just loved on me, listened to me, encouraged me, all of that. So, yeah. Honestly, my hardest times were youth pastor times.
Okay.
Those were the hardest times.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, sure, there have been a number of times where I've been ready to give up. I have gone through some really, really hard times, some devastating times, some times that have ripped at my soul and ripped at my heart and have just broken me. And so I just see, even looking back, how God has used those broken times, how he's used that suffering to continue to minister through me.
What are some key messages you would have for younger youth workers today?
Number one would be your personal walk with Jesus Christ. You cannot spend time in the Word just for message preparation. You need to be in the Word for personal application. You've got to spend the time with God on a daily basis. We are living on a battlefield, and I know we sometimes toss that around loosely, but Ephesians talks about that, that we're in a battle, and we do not fight against flesh and blood, that we have an enemy. And as a youth worker, male and female, you might as well just paint a target on your chest, because the enemy does not like you at all. The enemy feeds on young people today to manipulate, to control, and to ultimately destroy. And for you to step in and stand in the gap on their behalf to bring glory to God and to minister to these students, man, the enemy is going to seek to hammer you and hammer your family. So one, you got to be in the Word. Number two, you've got to make sure that your wife, if you are married, and your children are your priority above the youth ministry. And how do you make that happen? You go to your wife, you go to your husband, and you say to them, you have my permission to speak into me when I am getting out of whack, when I'm getting out of whack time-wise, emotionally. You have my permission to come to me and say to me, this isn't going well right now. And I will not be defensive, and I will not fight with you, and I will listen to you, and I will heed your words in what you are saying. And your spouse is there to help you stay balanced when it comes to youth ministry and family and the rest of that. Thirdly, you need accountability. You need people of the same sex, godly men and women, that you give permission to ask you all the hard questions. Okay. And they're going to be there to help keep you on the straight and narrow.
Yeah.
For years, my accountability partner has been Dr. Bob McCray. He is one of the youth ministry professors at Moody Bible Institute. And God has used Bob McCray to save me. You know, many times I'm all by myself in a hotel room. So what prevents me from making bad choices?
Right.
You know, it's my walk with God. It's my character. And there are times where I've been a heartbeat away from doing something stupid. And it's like the Holy Spirit taps me on the shoulder and says, what are you going to say to Bob? What are you going to say to him? And so that's been really, really important in my life. And for us to think we can be lone rangers, for us to think we can be on our own and we can do it, man, we just set ourselves up for a fall.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those would be my top three words of advice for young youth men and women coming along.
And the next 100 pieces of advice are found in this great book that you just wrote.
Thanks.
Mustard Seeds on Youth Ministry.
That was a seamless transition right there.
That's why we're experts at this podcasting thing. Yeah, I read through it, Greg, and it's just so straightforward and practical and simple and honest. It's just gold. It's like the books of Timothy for youth workers, really.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to encourage. I wanted to be vulnerable. I wanted to share just some of the stuff I've learned down through the years.
Yeah. How long did it take you to write this?
I am a terrible writer. So thank God for editors. So this is my fourth book, and every book I've written has taken me, you know, well over a year to write it, just because, you know, I write it and rewrite it and rewrite it and rewrite it. You know, I read something where an author says, you never finish your book, you just eventually abandon it. So, you know, and then you turn it over to a great editor, and they kind of work to help it sound better.
Well, it's gold, and every young youth worker should definitely pick up a copy of this.
Thanks.
So a couple more questions for you. What excites you about the future of youth ministry, and what worries you about the future of youth ministry?
What excites me about youth ministry is students have really tried so much stuff, and it's all come up empty, the things of the world. And students now are being introduced to the person of Jesus Christ. Christ is changing them in radical ways, taking their brokenness and taking those ashes and turning them into something really beautiful and working in and through them. And I see God raising up heroes of the faith. I see God raising up young men and women, teenagers who are passionate about their walk with Jesus, their love for him. You know, I share this in front of teenagers. I just spoke at Camp Chaminade, and over 500 students and staff for this retreat. And I said to the teenagers, adults say to me, doesn't it scare you to speak to teenagers? Aren't you intimidated by teenagers? And when I say that, the whole crowd just kind of busts out laughing to kind of think about that. I say, here's what I say to these adults. I say, if you saw teenagers the way I see teenagers, that's the only group you'd want to work with, because I see God doing awesome things in their lives today. So that's what encourages me about the future. I believe that's going to get even greater. I believe as the world gets darker, and I believe as there's more suffering, I believe you're going to find men and women who have a greater commitment to Jesus Christ and a desire to follow him. And then my concern for teenagers for the future are so many distractions. So many things that the world entices them with and seeks to pull them away. You know, technology entices them. It can be wonderful. It can be great. It can be amazing. It can be a tremendous tool, and it can be one of the greatest sources of evil and darkness there is. And so I just see down the road students getting involved in darker sin at a much earlier age. You know, the sin I saw in the 1970s that was involving college students, in the 80s and 90s that shifted to high school, in the late 90s and 2000s that shifted to middle school, and now, you know, we have fifth graders who are, you know, making some very, very sad choices in their lives that are just rocking them. Yeah. I just think suicide will continue to climb. I just think kids feel empty and frustrated, and nobody loves me, and nobody cares about me, and nobody listens to me. And so that's another reason why we in youth ministry, it's so important that they can be entertained by the world, but youth ministry has the potential of life change. It brings hope to them. It brings them a future. It brings them face to face with the living God.
Amen. This could be a hard question.
Okay.
Give us your most memorable moment
in student ministry.
Is this a positive or negative moment?
That's up to you.
Well, the thing that stands out the most for me, just jumps to the forefront, is like the one of the most awful experiences in youth ministry. That, you know, I talked about soul ripping and heart splitting and life changing. This would be one of those moments that come to my mind. I'm at First Free as director, and we're having a middle school all-nighter. So we're going to start out with an evangelistic outreach, and we got a band, and we got a speaker, and then they're going to load up on buses, and they're going to go to all kinds of places. They're going to play games. They're going to eat pizza. They're going to do – they got tokens to play games. They're going to do all kinds of stuff. So I show up for the beginning, and I'm there for the outreach and all of that. And then they're loading on the buses, and I meet with my middle school pastor, and I say, okay, man, have an awesome evening, great beginning, great response to the gospel, all of that. Any problems occur, you give me a call, okay? He's going to be up all night with them, with the staff. I'm going home to go to bed.
Good delegation.
Yeah. So there's probably, I don't know, there's 300 middle schoolers that are going now on this all-nighter, and they're going to come back at the end of the evening. They're going to have breakfast at the church, and then they're going to go home. So it's the early morning, and my phone rings, and I pick it up, and it's my middle school pastor. And he says, Greg, I have a student here who's gotten hurt. And I said, okay. And I said, have you called ambulance? And he said, yes. And the ambulance has just arrived. And I said, okay. He said, what do you want me to do? I said, I want you to stay there with the students. Is this a visitor or is this one of our members? He says, it's a visitor. And I said, okay, we've got a permission slip for him. Pull that permission slip and give me all the information on it. So he gives me all the information on it. And I said, you just go be with the students now. Go focus on them. I'll take care of this. So he's like, okay. So I call the parents and I go, I wake them up because it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. And I say, hi, my name's Greg Speck and I'm the director of First Free. And your son is at our outreach and he's been hurt. And they're bringing him to the hospital, and I am leaving now for the hospital, and I will meet you there. And unfortunately, I have no details as to what's happened. So they say, okay. So I get to the emergency room, and I wait, and the parents arrive. In the meantime, I'm talking with my middle school pastor, and they were at a pizza place that had kind of a game area attached with it. And he was in the little balls, you know, the little foam balls you throw around and stuff. He was playing in the balls. And all of a sudden, somebody noticed that he was just laying there. He wasn't moving or anything. And so our staff went in and got him, and he wasn't breathing at the time. And they started mouth to mouth, and he threw up and thought he was doing better. And we had a doctor there on our youth staff, an emergency room doctor and nurses and all that. So he got immediate care. And then the ambulance arrived and they were working on him. So I tell the parents what I know, and we're sitting in the lobby. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, I need to call the executive pastor. I need to let him know what's happened. We're going to need to pay for this whole hospital stay, all of this stuff. They're probably going to keep him overnight for observation, all of that stuff. I'm sitting there, and into the waiting room walks a doctor. And he walks over to us, and he looks, and he goes, are you Mr. and Mrs. da-da-da-da? And they say, yes. And he says to them, I'm sorry. Your son is gone. And I just sat there like it just took my breath away. I was totally stunned. I expected maybe a lot of things. I did not expect that. And the father stood up, and he had, there was a chair next to him, and he picked up the chair and he threw it across the room. We were the only ones in the emergency room. At that point, the doctor just walks away. The mother puts her head down and starts to cry. And I'm just sitting there in shock. And I reach over to the mother and I put my arm around her and I just say to her, I am so sorry. I am so sorry. I didn't even know what to say at this point. They're total visitors to our church. They don't know anything about us. I don't know anything about her. I try to comfort her a little bit. And I try to talk to her a little bit. Then I get up to go find the husband. I walk outdoors. He's standing in the parking lot. I start walking over to him and he points at me and he says, get away from me. So out of respect, I just turn around and I walk back into the emergency room. I come over and I sit back down with the woman and I say to her, ma'am, do you have any kind of a church that you attend? And she says to me, well, we're Jewish. I said, okay. I said, do you have a synagogue you attend? And she said, yes. And I said, can I get your rabbi's name? And she gives me the name. So I call the rabbi on the phone and I explain to him what's happened. And I ask if the rabbi would come to the hospital to meet with these people, to be there. And so the rabbi comes to the hospital to be there. In the meantime, I get the doctor aside and I say to him, what happened? He said to me, I have no idea. He said he has no bruises on him. He has no lacerations, nothing. He said, we just couldn't get him to breathe. We just couldn't get him to breathe. He said, we're gonna have to do an autopsy. So I thought the autopsy is going to come back and it's going to say aneurysm or it's going to be something like that. And the autopsy comes back and it says extreme whiplash. And what they surmise is he was in the balls playing around and some kid came down on the slide into the balls, caught him on the side of the face, not hard enough to leave a bruise, but enough to snap his neck around, and it just killed him instantly. The autopsy said that if this would have happened in the emergency room, they would not have been able to save him. It just killed him instantly, broke his neck and killed him. So for me, that was like my greatest nightmare come true. To have a young person I'm responsible for that's been entrusted to me, and I've lost that child. And I can never get that child back for those parents. And what it caused me to do is I said to myself and I said to my staff, we think very, very purposely about not hurting our students emotionally, not hurting them spiritually, and making sure this is a safe environment for them emotionally. But you know what? Some of the games and activities and things we have done in the past have put students at risk. And if I can lose a kid in the balls there at a pizza place, man, I mean, there are 100 other things we've done which could have cost us a life. So we really rethought what we did in the name of fun when it came to games and activities and things like that, like, you know, put a big cardboard box over your head and run across the gym and try to get to the other side and smash into each other and, you know, all kinds of stuff. Where honestly, physically, we put our kids at risk and we just rethought that whole thing.
How many years ago was that?
That happened in 1997, 98, right in there.
Any more communication with that family?
No more. We asked to come to the funeral, and they respectfully asked that we do not come.
Wow.
Talked with the rabbi, and the rabbi, you know, informed us, do not send them flowers or do something like that. That's not part of our Jewish tradition, and they would prefer you didn't come to the funeral. So we respected the wishes. It turns out, and I would never have told the parents this because I think it would have been probably insulting to them, but that evening during the rally, he had come forward to surrender his life to Christ. Mm-hmm. So I have total confidence that one day I'll see him again in heaven. Mm-hmm. And we'll be able to talk through that whole evening. So,
yeah.
So that's probably one of the life changers for me that occurred in my youth ministry journey that kind of rocked me.
Yeah.
One of my highlights for speaking anyway was speaking on the island of Ibiza off the coast of Spain for spring break, and the U.S. military brought in all their teenagers from the bases, from England, from Germany, from Italy, from all over Europe. They came in, and I had the privilege of speaking to them for a week. And that was just a huge highlight, a huge blessing. They were so much fun. They were so open, so receptive, such a great group to be with.
That's fantastic. Any final words of encouragement for youth workers out there?
Let other people love you. Let other people encourage you. We are all in this together. Nobody's any better than anybody. Nobody's any worse than anybody. But don't try to do this on your own. Don't try to bear this all on your own. Man, let others help you and encourage you. And if I can encourage you at all, I would be glad to do that. I read every message personally. I respond to every message personally. If you want to email me, it's just Greg Ospek, G-R-E-G, the letter O, S-P-E-C-K, Greg Ospek at Gmail, or just come to my website, gregspek.com, and you can see my materials there. You can also contact me from there. I'm still on Facebook because I'm old, and I'm on Instagram and Twitter and all that stuff as well.
And you are one of the most approachable people that I've ever encountered in youth ministry. So thank you for that.
Thanks. Well, that's important to me. I want people to feel comfortable in being able to come up to me.
How do people get a copy of your book?
If they go to my website, just gregspek.com, click on materials, you'll see it right there, Mustard Seeds and Youth Ministry, and would be happy to sign a book so that when I'm dead, it'll be really valuable. Really valuable.
Greg, how long do you plan to stay in youth ministry?
People have asked me that. And the response Bonnie and I give is, we're going to let God retire me. So I will continue to go as long as God gives me favor. You know, the reality is this, that if people have a choice at a youth conference between some young hip guy or myself, they typically are going to go with the young hip guy, okay? Honestly, our culture, we don't value age very much, and I get that. I see that. But I still get a lot of invitations to speak for students, so I'm just happy to do whatever God raises up, and as long as he gives me favor, as long as he opens the door, I will continue to do this until he retires me.
Yeah. Well, there's such tremendous value in longevity, consistency, steadiness, wisdom. You're right. They're undervalued, but not by God.
Absolutely. So I hang on to that for sure.
Well, thanks for doing this, Greg. And thank you for your influence in my life over the years and the lives of so many students that that I've been able to shepherd as well. It's just tremendous to see that come about full circle and to see you continue to pour into lives of students. So just very appreciative of that.
Thank you. Thanks. Thanks for taking the time to encourage me. Thanks for blessing me. That it meant a lot to me. You did a great job and really enjoyed being on your podcast.
Thank you so much.
All right.
What an amazing interview there, Steve, with Greg. What struck you most from your time with Greg? I mean, you've known Greg a long time, but from this particular interview, kind of what were some of the things he unpacked that sort of were impactful for you?
I think with Greg, what you see is what you get. He is a man of high integrity. And so there's no flash and dash to Greg Speck. I mean, he's great on stage, but he's just a humble servant who loves to preach the gospel. And it's simple. It's simple. Like, youth ministry has so many bells and whistles that we get attracted to. And that's not necessary. I mean, good speaking skills are necessary, but it's really the heart of youth ministry is loving students and loving Jesus and pointing students to Jesus. And that's what Greg's been doing for over 30 years.
And I can't even begin to imagine how many people have been introduced or deepened in their walk with Christ through the ministry of Greg Speck. 30 years speaking to countless students across the globe. I'm just in awe.
Yeah, we tried to, you know, I threw out, do you have any idea, Greg, how many people you've spoken to? And he doesn't. But I'm guessing it's got to be in the hundreds of thousands. He's been speaking around the world for years. So, yeah, to think of all those teenagers, some of whom have gone into youth ministries, some of them like me, who Greg is part of my
part of your story.
My story, my getting called into youth ministry. And so to think of the impact he's had is just tremendous.
We are very grateful that Greg gave some time for this interview. It would behoove you. I love that word, behoove, by the way. It would behoove you to check into Greg. He would be a absolute wonderful addition to any event you're planning in your youth ministry.
He's still out there speaking. And like I said, I just heard him last winter speaking to our middle school kids. So you can find him at gregospeck.com, gregospeck.com. You can find all of his resources and his latest book, Mustard Seeds on Youth Ministry, on his website. He's also on social media. He's on Facebook. He's on Twitter. And the great thing is he loves to respond. He'll respond to you if you reach out to him. He does personally respond to every email that he receives.
That's awesome. So again, so thankful to Greg Speck for spending time with us on the Sherpa podcast. Hopefully you were encouraged by this, and hopefully you get a chance to reach out and have Greg impact you and your students.
That's it for today's episode, but we'll have more coming in the future. And as Youth Ministry Sherpas would say, keep going.
And one day you too can achieve legendary status in youth ministry.
See you next month.